Hello. Welcome to another edition of the Weekly Crypto Check-In recorded on April the 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Robert Swartha, and I'm joined by my co-host, Andres Andate. How's it going, Andres?
Hey, Robert. I know that first headline has got your tongue tied. It's 300 versus 11%. It's like not something you see often, but it's good to see you. I'm streaming today from Manhattan. It's my first trip to New York since before COVID.
Oh, wow.
So I hope I'm audio and video coming through clear. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. And hopefully I don't sound too nasally. I'm dealing with some allergies, so I think I'm going to attribute part of that to my tongue tiedness here today.
Well, quite a bit's happened over the last week.
Yes. It's, you know, we had more bullet points to talk about last week, but this week, you know, it's kind of a little more varied, which is nice. You know, the first one is probably a bullet point. It says perspective, 11% versus 300% could mean anything and everything.
That's right.
But in this case, we're kind of referring back to what the SEC is, if you kind of go and look at the numbers, but the SEC is asking for a remedy in the Ripple case. They're asking for just shy of $2 billion, $1.95. And it's more than, you know, what the unregistered sales were of $728 million. And you kind of go back, and somebody posted this on Twitter, I found really interesting. If you go back and look at the other crypto cases that the SEC has settled in some form, whether they went to actual court or not, or whether they were just settled outright initially, you see something as low as 1% and something as high as 75%. Nothing ever equal to the sales or what they consider the problem. But in this case, they think Ripple's due to pay 300%. So
three times. So the SEC, if I'm understanding correctly, they're asking Ripple to pay three times the amount of securities that were actually sold, when in prior cases, it was 11%.
Well, in one case, it was 1%.
Well, right. But on average, it's been 11%.
But on average, I would say, I don't know, it varies so widely between 75%. And there's one, two, three, four, five cases here. One of them, the lawsuit actually put them out of business. That was the one that it was, they only had to pay 1% on top, you know, so. Mm-hmm. I don't know, the SEC, I'm not sure who the SEC is protecting, because they're supposed to be protecting, you know, retail investors. And they, in that case, they put people out of business and the token went to zero.
Right.
Really taught them
a lesson. But a lot of these sales from Ripple were offshore.
Oh, I think over 80% of them. So 80% of that 728 million were offshore sales. And then none of the investors in any case lost money. So it's just, you know, just kind of
shows. I'm curious what your takeaway is. I know, I think I have a good sense, and some of our listeners who tune into the show weekly probably have a sense for your point of view on you know, the SEC's approach to the space has been through enforcement actions versus maybe working more proactively with the space to try to get legislation, which I think the industry would like to see. Right. But what's your take when you look at this this dollar amount, like $2 billion?
You know, it's a joke. I mean, you know, I have to, in some sense, I have to be careful, right? Like, you know, this Teton Crypto Capital is a fund that the SEC potentially could care about.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you kind of rewind, Gensler, who's now the head of, or the chair of the SEC, he, when he was teaching at MIT about this stuff, he said there needed to be clarity. And he had opinions about all these things. Now he gets the SEC and he's basically saying the exact opposite, or saying it's clear, it doesn't need problem. It's like extremely hypocritical. So I'm just kind of tired of it, and I'm ready for to be new leadership and actually show leadership. There's no leadership right now. It's pure just a regulator run amok, unfortunately. So,
Well, let's talk about to pick up on Ripple. There was news that came out that Ripple's to launch a USD stablecoin.
Correct. Yeah, they did that late last week. And it was admittedly a surprise to me. I didn't really think that they would be getting in the game. You have relatively entrenched players with other USDT, by far the biggest, and Circle with their USDC, at least from a dollar perspective. They're $60 billion probably. Haven't looked lately, but it's a great business if you can be in it. With interest rates where they're at, you know, these, you know, they're throwing off billions of dollars a year in interest that these I guess promoters get to keep. So to see that Ripple did it, like I said, caught me off guard. But I started thinking about it. The XRP ledger, which Ripple cares about, doesn't have a stablecoin on it for all intents and purposes right now. So it will bring liquidity to the XRP and other tokens that try to launch off the XRP ledger. And it obviously is, if Ripple can do it, is a great business for it to kind of be in. So
sure. Yeah. Because they have a lot of stuff offshore, Ripple, that they're doing.
Focus 90% of their business and the customers are outside the US. So you know, in some ways, they're slowly building up a suite of stuff that they can offer clients and almost like a one-stop shop. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves. They haven't announced the ticker or the release date, but they did say that it will be launched on the XRP ledger and Ethereum. So it'd be a kind of a cross bridge to kind of draw some money in. Kind of their thinking is this is a stablecoin is a bridge to traditional finance to be in a DeFi system, to kind of give them something to use that it feels a little bit more normal. And maybe over time that, you know, they may choose to branch out and do other stuff. So,
okay.
But by the end of the year is all they're saying. It'll be launched, my guess is, in the next 3 or 4 months. So
sure. Something to continue to track in the headlines. This third one, Bitcoin gains are happening after hours. We were talking about this on a prior crypto check-in. A lot of the folks that are newer to Bitcoin, they're buying it through the ETF, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of these assets are traded globally on various exchanges. So what's up with this, this news piece that you found to be relevant and interesting?
Yeah, it felt like this was what's happening, but somebody actually put it in a chart and talk about it, I guess, made me feel that I wasn't crazy, I think is part of it, admittedly. But you know, if you kind of look at between, you know, US Eastern hours of 4 p.m. up to 9:30 in the morning, there's certainly times that Bitcoin will run in the evenings, 5 or 5:30. You'll see a bit of an increase there, or you'll see it right before the market opens in the morning. And if you also look at the Bitcoin futures, you'll see the price sometimes before market open in the morning actually get beat down in Bitcoin. And maybe that's when some of the buying happens. The rumor is that Jane Street is the one that's running those futures and kind of quote unquote manipulates the price. Considering
Jane Street being one of the market makers for a lot of the listed over the counter product.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. And when you reference 4 p.m. to 9:30 a.m., you're sort of taking the inverse of what are standard market hours for the U.S. exchanges. So, for example, the major exchanges where stocks are sold daily open at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, close at 4 p.m. Eastern.
Right. So, basically the inverse of those open hours.
Right.
Or weekends for that matter.
Right.
Weekends are pretty quiet, but so you have the inverse. I think, you know, so some of it's the Bitcoin futures and maybe trying to be opportunistic with buying the Bitcoin they need to be able to create the shares in these ETFs. And you kind of couple that with the opposite hours are Asia, and Asia is in the crypto business. And
yes, kind of they are.
Algos going there. So it's just fascinating to kind of see. But 40% of the gains are after hours, and there's lots of gaps in the charts. If you're a technical analysis person, there's lots of gaps. That's good and bad, depending on what side of the gap you're on. And the whole idea is gaps get filled. So,
we have heard from calls that we've both been on that one of the strategies that has become, I would say, more not a strategy, you know, that we do execute or that we're interested in, but certainly a strategy that is present and is becoming more and more of a market participant are those that are trading on the volatility in prices.
Absolutely.
So that would gel with, you know, this research that you found.
Yeah, it's more Bitcoin. I went from never really having to think about Bitcoin for the fun to now all I feel like I talk about is Bitcoin these days.
So. Well, it seems like sometimes we're like very heavy and legal in Bitcoin, you know, but that's just what dominates the headlines. Typically, we try to report on some of the major headlines that we think should, you know, potentially get, you know, some of serious crypto investors' attention. So,
there's no denying that Bitcoin draws people into the space.
If
they choose to go further than Bitcoin, you know, over time that will be to be seen, but it's definitely the brand name.
Yeah, it's what brings them in. Right. Okay. Well, let's move on to, our topic of ETFs and IBIT. IBIT is nearing $20 billion in assets under management.
Right. And
incredible.
It's incredible. I mean, they launched January the 11th. So you're roughly 3 months out from that. And certainly by then, by tomorrow, I'm guessing it will have crossed that 20 billion. And to think that Larry Fink originally thought that they wanted to have 5 billion by the end of 2024. Maybe he was being a little bit conservative with his estimate, but it's impressive what this particular one has done. And also the Fidelity one, FBTC has been very strong as well. They're still on their consecutive days of inflow streak last time I looked. So,
yeah. And has it become a tale of two or three, let's call it offerings or products? How would you characterize the market? Because I know that there were multiple ETF or exchange traded funds launched.
Yeah.
There's nine. Okay.
Nine plus the conversion of the Grayscale into an ETF. So there's 10 of them. There won't be 10 long term. I don't understand how they differentiate themselves besides fees. And at that point, like, is probably not profitable for the bottom half even right now. So we'll see. I mean, as the price appreciates, obviously that helps their AUM number go up just kind of naturally.
Well, guess who is advertising? Guess who is advertising in the Atlanta airport yesterday?
Grayscale.
On their electronic billboards, Grayscale.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, they certainly have, well, they're making their fee is a 1.5%. So five times what these other ones are. And they had tons of AUM to begin with. So they've been bleeding a lot. They've bled over half their AUM since launch as an ETF. And, you know, I don't know where it goes. You would think it goes close to zero at some point. Like, why would anyone stick around in it? But they definitely
go ahead.
They definitely have the dollars to spend on marketing because they got that the fee flow. So
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. The last two times I've been in the airport, I've noticed that I'm like, wow, they're still spending. Like, and it's obvious that nobody wants them.
See. Okay. Well, gosh, we're mowing through these topics today. So, but back to another legal case. So the court ruled the crypto not securities on secondary markets. What's this headline? And why did you find it to be, I guess, interesting this week?
Well, so this goes back to the Coinbase case, Coinbase and SEC. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit last week where the judge threw out the part where Coinbase Wallet was not acting like a broker. That's a win for the industry. And then kind of cleaned up some other stuff in the case. And the judge ruled that any crypto sold on a secondary exchanges like Coinbase would not be viewed as securities. You know, that's great to hear, right? The more times we hear this, the more, I guess, it becomes law, the less the SEC can try to find another way to argue it. And maybe at some point they'll decide they need to go bark up another tree. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate that we just have to go through the courts to kind of get to it, but it's good. I mean, granted, it could be sold as a security. It could be packaged. I mean, heck, we got there originally with oranges.
Right.
So how we test. So we could.
Yeah.
Certainly see it, but that's not the way Coinbase runs their business. So that was good news.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, one of the things that I wanted to include today in our conversation was, you know, as you look at, we came through the first quarter and a lot of eyes, you know, were on the launch of these ETFs. We've now had several months to talk and see the market's reaction. We also have the halving coming up, expected sometime maybe in the next week to 10 days.
Maybe 2 weeks-ish, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. As you put those two together, right, the news and the headlines about IBIT and these other ETFs and the expected halving, what's your overall sense and sentiment as you look at just the market?
You know, I think, well, I hesitate to say, if you look at the patterns from the past, you go into a halving and then it kind of, maybe it takes a quick breather, but then kind of starts heading north up into the right. Excuse me. You know, these Bitcoin ETFs have somewhat changed the game. I'm hopeful that we still see the pattern that we've seen in the past. We certainly still feel like we're in a bull market. Other altcoins, if you kind of look at it from that perspective, are holding strong. Bitcoin's dominance is one way that you can look at the market, like Bitcoin compared to everybody else, kind of what that ratio is, that continues to kind of come down. you see that in a bull market cycle where it comes all the way down and then it bottoms. And then as you get into a bear market, it basically reverses and Bitcoin tends to become far more dominant. Will this be the last time we see that? I don't know. I'm partial believer that this is our last FOMO cycle, 100% FOMO cycle. I think we start to get seeing cycles in the future where some tokens are only going to be the casino ever, like we are now, and other ones will be more utility driven. I may be a little bit biased there, obviously, but I hold to that belief that we are nearing the end of this casino phase of crypto, or at least the headline portion of it.
Yeah, you and I were on my show yesterday with an attorney who does pretty robust practice, I think it's fair to say, when it comes to, you know, the alts business. And he was saying, you know, that from his perspective, that we were in kind of 2.0 or the second inning of the space. And I think he traced, you know, his experience back in the space to 2008. Any initial takeaways or thoughts from, you know, his reaction? You know, he seemed to think that that the SEC, and him being a former enforcement attorney, his take was, you know, they being the SEC, had a hard time getting their arms around the industry because the industry was full of a lot of people that were, you know, they didn't have good intentions. And right. And so now we're kind of in a different environment post FTX, Binance. Just curious what your thoughts were from that conversation.
Yeah, I've used the baseball analogy in the past. I said last summer when the SEC Ripple ruling came out that XRP wasn't security on secondary transactions. That was July the 13th of last year. I said that's when we basically just sang the national anthem, and the judge said play ball. Like that's when he said we were in a second, third, fourth inning, whatever he said yesterday, I was like, maybe I would agree with the smaller number there. But you know, until there's regulation, we're not terribly far in the game. Mm-hmm. And we still need that. So yeah, I'm hopeful that we might get stablecoin regulation this year. I'm starting to hear a little bit more about it. You can tell that it's actually probably more is happening behind the scenes because Elizabeth Warren came out yesterday and was talking about how the bad stuff that happens in crypto. So that probably means someone else is probably provoking her.
Something else is coming. But what do you make of Patrick Henry? I mean, he's retiring.
He's
right.
Yeah. I've read
the congressman from North Carolina that was one of the few congressmen or women in DC who, I want to say, was pro crypto, but was at least open door to the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was trying to push for legislation. Like I would actually go as far as to say he was pro crypto. And he was, he's been quoted as saying that, like, I don't know if it, publicly or if people have said, he said this kind of thing, that he wants some crypto regulation to pass and that to kind of to be his, I guess, final act of sorts. I hope he's successful. Even if it's stable coin, we just need something that'll be like a building block to base off of. So, it's just, you know, the same time you see stable coin stuff start popping back up. You had the Ripple news that we talked about where they're launching a stable coin. And then you had some news that really I didn't follow too closely out of the EU where they were talking about some regulation around stable coins. And so I don't know, everyone's talking about stable coins also. So maybe we will get it this time. I'm not hopeful that Congress can get anything done right now, but we'll see.
Yeah, we're in an election year, and it's obviously there's a lot of big topics dominating the headlines, you know, and within those is obviously more regulation or regulation within crypto, which, you know, will rear its head at some point. But lots of legal cases, a lot of news continuing to come out on, you know, the impact of more and more dollars flowing into these ETFs.
Right.
And then obviously just like you said, things like stable coins will rear their head from time to time and dominate the headlines like they did this past week.
Absolutely. Well, appreciate you taking the time. And if anyone wants to join us or catch us on a podcast, you can subscribe in your podcast player. Just search for Teton Crypto Capital or the Weekly Crypto Check-In. Until next time, Andres, take care.
Good to see you, Robert.